Iowa makes the big jump. What do you think about what the committee did with Iowa, Kirk?
Well, you know, their fan base maybe got a hold of the committee because they have been very, very frustrated with a lot of people not giving this team the recognition they deserve. Iowa, this is huge news because if you sit and look right now with the schedule that they have a big opportunity in front of them to take care of business in the regular season. And then, you know, you're thinking, how can they move into that top four? They play Ohio State. And if Ohio State beats Michigan State and Michigan, there's Ohio State sitting up in the top four. It will give the Hawkeyes, whether you agree or you disagree, based on where the committee is evaluating them right now, if Iowa wins out, they don't need to worry about you or me or anybody else. It's in front of them. Mm-hmm. If Iowa wins out, they will be one of the four teams. It's as simple as that.
Well, Tori, we wanted to be in the conversation.
Yeah, I guess it's going to be hard to keep playing that disrespect card now.
No, not after you jump 4 points for beating Indiana and first team out with another Big Ten team ahead of you. So
makes you wonder about external pressure, though. I mean, I think, you know, a couple of the folks on the College Football Playoff ranking show tonight, and we're recording on Tuesday night, I should say, had noted that, you know, they really looked at the resume closer this time, that it looked like it became impossible to look at an undefeated team 2-0 against their own top 25 and okay strength of schedule and keep them out.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. So first off, welcome to 12 Saturdays, episode 9. I'm
10.
James. No, it's 9, I think.
Last week was 9, you said.
No, because I was wrong. It was 8. Sorry, this is 9. Good thing that the committee counts better than we do. I'm James Bladel.
I'm Tori Brecht. We can call this one 9B, I guess.
9A, 9B. We are basking in the glow of the news. The recently, just hours old announcement of the new College Football Playoff rankings where Iowa is number 5. And yeah, I think you're right. I think that they did kind of hear that cacophony of, hey, you forgot us, and what the hell, Alabama. But I think maybe that looks a little bit smarter.
Right.
But the other part is, I think this week's scream will be coming from everybody in the Big 12.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're in big trouble over there. Yeah, and, you know, that lack of a conference championship game could really come to bite them 2 years in a row, which is really crazy.
So last year they were talking and it was like, well, we really need to expand this to 8 teams, and I thought that was ridiculous. Or they said something about 6 teams with a play-in or something, and I thought that was ridiculous. But I'm starting to see the point. If you have a Power 5 conferences and strong runners-up, or, you know, like an Iowa, Ohio State, or or 2 teams out of the Big 12, plus Notre Dame is not tripping over their own genitals, that does create a bit of a problem, doesn't it? You know, because now every time somebody says Notre Dame, you're talking about, well, which 2 conferences are we going to leave out?
Well, really, and I actually said when they announced that they were going to expand it or go away from the BCS into the playoff, I always thought 8 seemed to be the most rational number for the very reason you said. You know, everybody talks about the top 10 teams in the country. You know, you want to be around that many, because I think most of us always feel that that is about the right number of folks that would be a legitimate championship contender. It always has felt like it's a little bit more than 4, at least.
Well, it create, when you have this many, you know, power conferences, when Notre Dame is creating a problem for you, and when you have, you know, one loss powers in these power conferences that are probably better than some of the champions coming out of the others, I agree, it creates a mess. But anyway, we're up there with them. Great is it to be like cheering that we're the first team out?
Well, the crazy thing to me, though, is that this week, for some reason, to me, struck me even more as a surreal moment than even last week. You know, I think partially because there was a little outrage last week. Like, we felt we should be higher than 9, but whoa, really 5?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it's like,
because I'm kind of looking at it and when you just say it out loud and you're like, you know, Alabama, Iowa, Notre Dame, Ohio State, it's, whoa, what? Well, you know, not used to that kind of rarefied air. And, you know, this team has earned it.
It's exactly right. And that gives us, I mean, that segues a little bit. I mean, I think if you are going by resume and eyeball test, and if the committee is trying to send a message that they do start with a blank, you know, blank page. So it wasn't like Iowa moved up four slots. According to them, they start with a blank page every week, right? I don't know if I buy that, but then what that tells me is that they did look at the way we played Indiana versus the way Ohio State played Indiana and the way Michigan State played Indiana, the way Michigan State lost, and then they're kind of like, well, hey, if you're going to have Ohio State 3, you can't keep Iowa down in, you know, down in the hinterlands here. You got to move them up a little bit. So, I mean, maybe this is a question of the eyeball test, you know, actually helping us out.
Well, I thought it was interesting hearing what the chairman of the committee had said about Iowa, and that it was that they're strong in all phases of the ball and they're very consistent. And they have been. I mean, Iowa hasn't really blown anybody out of the water outside maybe of Northwestern and North Texas a little bit, but they really haven't been overly challenged either. I mean, the Wisconsin game was probably the only one that I felt was seriously in doubt. I mean, you look at the close call even against Pittsburgh, and Iowa never trailed in that game. The Indiana score looks pretty close, and Iowa trailed early in the first half of that one. But I don't know about you, but I never really felt overly like that game was in danger. I'll say this. I always felt like Iowa would be able to go down and score and be the last team to score in that game. Yeah. That's how I felt.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I clenched a little bit when during that onside kick and I saw the ball pop out.
Sure. I mean, but again, they would just have had to, you know, get that onside kick, go down, get a touchdown, and get a two-point conversion.
That would have just been going to overtime. That would have just tied it.
Just to go to overtime. And generally, you know, I was putting up around 30 points. They're holding their opponent usually under 20 or in that area, and they're just they're a solid team that will just grind you down and find a way to beat you.
Yeah, and to your point, it's always been pretty much a two-score game, with the exception of Pittsburgh, and I think where was Illinois when they fumbled right there at the end, where it was kind of like, they could have made it a one-possession game, but then they fumbled, and then we iced it away. So I see what you're saying. It's like, it's almost like we're teasing opponents with this idea that they're not getting blown out. But if you look at the way we're playing, you know, keep away, we're playing this ball control and we're two possessions up at all times. It's like, yeah, I get it. But
well, it's funny, Jim, when you talk about the eyeball test, I think, you know, we all kind of, because we're conditioned by ESPN, know, when somebody says the eyeball test, you're thinking about huge plays and the ball flying around and very little defense. But, you know, when you look at the teams that play Iowa, and a lot of times some of their offensive players want no part of the game anymore, and there's still 12, 13 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I mean, Iowa passes my eyeball test as somebody that likes football, where you're asserting your dominance and frankly, you're just, you know, manning up and putting teams away. And that's what Iowa does.
Well, yeah, and I think that we're finally starting to win some converts to that style of football, and at least, you know, the one thing you cannot argue is that it has been effective. And so take
it's
a look.
Pretty, it's pretty the same way a blue ribbon county fair hog is, you know. To an outside observer, it may not look conventionally attractive, but when you look at what it does, you know, it provides ham, bacon, pork. I mean, pork chops.
Oh, yeah. They all come from this magical animal.
This one magic, majestic, fat animal that pushes around. Yeah, that's Iowa.
Just don't smell it, right? Just don't get too close. But
exactly.
Well, spending a moment on the Indiana game. I mean, I think you're right. I never really felt like the game was in jeopardy. I did, I think it was a concern to see that. Well, yeah, Tevin Coleman went to the NFL, but they just reloaded with that Howard guy. Wow, I mean, that guy was he seemed to get a little bit – he was shut down in the second half, which was encouraging. You know, he looked every bit the part, and I think that was great. What we did in some respects is we flipped the narrative on Indiana and said, you know, fine, you got probably possibly one of the best and most accurate pocket quarterbacks in, you know, in receiver core in the Big Ten, so we'll make you run on us. And that's
what we did. And Ferentz actually, you know, referenced that in his press conference, saying that, you know, the goal is to make a team one-dimensional, and in this case, the way to make Indiana one-dimensional was to take away the pass game.
Yeah,
because they knew that's where they could get beat.
Yeah, it's just a different dimension with Indiana.
Correct.
So, yeah, no, and it worked, although it did look a little dicey there, I think, late in the second half before CJ's heroics. And, man, that guy's got to be what did you say? Was it Gergen that was calling you, doing a shot every time they said groin?
Actually, it was Greg Sackler that claimed to be doing that, and I referenced it in my column this week. It claimed that he got through pretty much an entire fifth. So, yeah, I mean, what more can you say about CJ? That, you know, and I actually thought his mobility. I rewatched the game and the football in 60 thing that they do, and you know, he was moving around pretty good. I mean,
he didn't
look spry and he didn't look explosively fast, but he looked more than capable.
He's becoming, dare I test my age here, he's becoming Chandler-esque.
A little bit, yeah, Nathan Chandler.
You know, where
deceptively fast.
Where he would just kind of like pick up and run, and you're like, wait a second, that guy can actually move. So that was great. It was great to watch him take care of it. It was great to watch Desmond King get his 8th pick of the year.
Yeah, thrown at 3 times, one completion. One incompletion and one interception. So that's pretty much the definition of a shutdown corner right there.
I'd say he pretty much ruins QBRs if you go in his direction. So mm-hmm. with the 30...
DK Island, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, what you want to talk some more about Indiana, or should we toast it?
You know, again, and this is what's interesting to me with, you know, you look at the quote-unquote soft schedule coming up for Iowa. And, you know, we talked last week about how hard we thought Maryland played. I thought Indiana played hard for 4 quarters again, too, maybe harder than they had in any other 4th quarter. And, you know, Iowa has a gigantic target on its back now,
Yep. Moving
up to number 5, especially. So you're going to get every team's best shot. And, man, that makes the games a lot of fun to watch, doesn't it?
It does. And, I mean, I think look no further than what Nebraska did to Michigan State. It's like their season is in a complete tailspin. They're kicking around the ashes of 2015, looking for something to build upon for next year. And they got it when they knocked off an undefeated top 10 conference opponent. So you've got to watch for Minnesota. You've got to watch for Purdue, you know, and we've got to watch for Nebraska, because basically you're now the target that can salvage somebody's season and maybe save somebody's coach.
Yeah, Daniel Murray knows a little something about being in that situation,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, exactly.
So yeah, I mean, that is definitely what Iowa has to look out for. Now, I will say that what I like, and I also touched on that in the column this week, too, about how Iowa's schedule lines up here at the end, is both the Minnesota and Nebraska games are big kind of right the wrongs and from last year kind of games. And, you know, Minnesota is at home at night, and then Purdue is at home. So, you know, I like the way it lines up.
Yeah, and I didn't think about that too much, Tori, or put too much stock into that until I just kind of went back and mentally did a count of how many times the coach or a player referred back to the second half of that Nebraska game last year as that, you know, that wake-up call, that point of inflection. I mean, the bowl game was the bowl game. They just kind of got run off the field. But just kind of how they kept pointing to that moment when they looked in the mirror and said, well, you know, we don't like what we're doing here, and this has got to change. And I think that the Nebraska game, I know they're not going to overlook that one. I don't think they're going to overlook, I mean, how could you overlook the hype coming up to this Saturday? I guess the only trap game really is Purdue, and it's a good thing that they're possibly the worst, you know, shadow of a team in the conference right now.
True enough, and it's at home as well,
so
with a lot on the line. So, and you know, to touch on that Nebraska,
then they better not embarrass me in front of my friend who's coming to see that too.
Yeah, But, you know, to touch on that Nebraska thing is that I have heard from some folks that know folks in the football program that that whole fiasco with what the Nebraska athletic director said after firing Bo Pelini about evaluating Iowa's program, and frankly, Nebraska shoots for higher than that, that rubbed people the wrong way. And I don't think there's anybody associated with Iowa football that doesn't want to go out there and just administer a beating if they can. I'm not going to guarantee that they can, but I think, you know, like I mentioned, you know, you remember that time that Iowa ran up the score on D'Antonio?
Mm-hmm.
I think this is one of those games where if Ferentz even smells the opportunity to do it, it's going to be foot to the floor.
Yeah. Yeah, but of Nebraska, I mean, they do kind of scare me like a wounded animal, you know?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it.
It's like, yes, I mean, in other circumstances, you would be a formidable predator. And right now you've got, you know, you gnawed off one of your paws to get out of a trap. But, you know, it's the fact that you have nothing to lose right now that's a little unnerving, where we have everything on the line. So, well, let's toast this one. And then let's talk about, really excited for our guest.
Yeah, we have a great guest this week. But before the toast, Jim, I think we need to have a little chat about, you know, you gave me kind of a ration of crap about the victory pickle last week and told me not to encourage Gergen. But I seem to recall somebody sitting in my basement in front of my TV kind of gnawing on some delicious looking.
Dude, I ate four pickles.
Yeah, victory pickle works.
I don't know. I was worried that it worked a little too well. I got those spicy chipotle pickles, and those are good. I don't usually like pickles, but if you cover them in spicy sauce and vodka, I come around to them.
Well, and Gergen said that he and his whole family had victory pickles at the game.
I just like making fun of you because not because of the pickle, but because it's just too easy to tee up the double entendre there.
Yeah, I know. But the really ironic part about it is that I was the one that's all season saying how we have to get away from superstitions and curses. when the rubber meets the road, you just can't.
So here's the point. If you want to have fun with superstition, since you brought up the victory pickle, go to Reddit, go to the college football page on a Monday. There's a thread that said, "It's Monday morning. Why is it your fault?" Everybody's like, "Well, I have this shirt that I've always worn, and my wife washed it," or something, or some guy, you know, mm-hmm. Everybody's got their superstition that they screwed up, and that's why their team lost. And it's just hilarious, some of those stories. So we'll never be able to say in the Reddit thread, "We forgot to eat the victory pickle."
Well, my daughter was laughing because she overheard me say it to my wife, "Hey, Saturday, don't let me leave the house without my victory pickle." My daughter's like, "You're what?" And then I had to explain to her what it meant. And then she just laughed at me.
See, honey, when a mommy Hawkeye and a daddy Hawkeye love each other very much, he takes his victory pickle, puts it in a plastic bag, and takes it to Kinnick. All right. So we'll toast this, and maybe we'll just get some other sound effects of that Vlasic commercial of the guy crunching on the pickle. All right, Tori, so I guess that means it's time to spin the wheel. So I think it's my turn. I will give it some elbow grease here. I just got back from a run, so I'm feeling kind of plucky. So let me give it a shot.
Well, you ran out of salmon oil?
Ran out of salmon oil? No, this is it's cod liver oil.
That's always a good choice.
All right, let me give it a spin.
My goodness, would you look at this? What an enormous spin. We could do a commercial while this is going good, make a little extra money.
JV, is that joint venture? Junior varsity?
No, I snuck that one on there because I felt like we needed to have another chat with our hometown favorite, Julian Vandeveld.
Oh, see, now that is a nice surprise. He is a huge audience favorite and an all-around Renaissance man.
Definitely.
I'm excited. Let's get him on the phone.
And a Davenporter to boot.
A Davenportian?
I think it's Davenporter.
Davenportian.
Davenportian.
All right, we'll ask Julian. All right, well, welcome to Julian. Welcome back to Julian. We had him on last year, right before the wheels came off, Tori. I mean, we had that hard-fought Wisconsin loss, and then we went into that collapse in Nebraska. But I think definitely much better sense around the Hawkeye Nation this year, eh, Julian?
Oh, very much so, yes, on all accounts.
You know, and normally I know, you know, Jim referenced it to you're a Renaissance man, you're more than football. And normally we'd want to talk a lot about, you know, comic books and Quad Cities Pizza and stuff. But, oh, my God, Iowa's ranked fifth in the country, and they're actually talking about national championship thoughts. Did you see this coming? Did you think this was possible?
Honestly, I thought that it was something that was possible, but I thought that we were going to have to build a little bit more. I thought it would, you know, you'd get like the 8-win season and then the 10 or 11 win season. And then you're looking at that, you know, that big spike, that swell of undefeated national championship aspirations, you know, before kind of dipping back down again, kind of the roller coaster ride that's been Kirk's career so far. But, this is a pleasant surprise. I am in no way complaining, that we just kind of went from, you know, everyone with torches and pitchforks to, oh my God, this could actually happen. I'm all about it.
So you, Julian, you were on that 2009 squad, I guess, arguably the last, you know, the last squad to kind of reach, you know, Ferentz team to reach these high, lofty peaks here. What do you see as, you know, what do you see as similarities or parallels between that season and what you're seeing now? And do you see any, like, specific differences?
The big things are the dominating defense, of course. You know, having a front seven this talented, it's hard to put together. More importantly, the secondary. You know, the incredible play the secondary does in King and Lomax and all those guys.
Yeah.
Maiden and all those. Just really has blown me away. And then the other thing I think is the offensive line, the way that the offensive line is playing, you know, really one unit, solidarity, very next man up, everybody, you know, playing at a high level together. And aside from that, the other part of it is the quarterback play. You know, they talk about the quarterback being the most important position on a team, and sometimes it's easy to feel like, well, with, you know, 21 other guys who play in a game, you know, maybe that's a little bit overstated. But, you know, you look at the elite teams, almost invariably have elite quarterbacks. And, you know, I see a lot out of CJ that you kind of saw out of Rick in terms of his swagger, his ability to throw the ball down the field, his composure in the pocket, and just the way that his courageousness and his attitude rallies the other guys on that team to him.
Yep.
And really, you know, makes everyone else play at a higher level.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, and it's been fun to watch. It's amazing. But take us kind of inside the feeling, Julian. When you start to look around and you see the ranking growing up there, you know, I know that Coach Ferentz likes to tell everybody to, you know, keep the blinders on, look at it day by day. But as a player, is it possible to do that? Are you not getting slapped on the back by other students? And how do you handle that? And what does the pressure feel like?
It's difficult. Honestly, it's difficult. It's easy when you're in the complex to go about it like, you know, it's just another week, rankings don't matter. You know, no matter how high or how low your rankings get, practice never really changes. You're still, especially on a Kirk Ferentz team, you know, the work that you put in is very consistent. And so when you're inside, the complex is very easy. On the outside, it's almost impossible to avoid, you know, as the expectations rise, you know, the you feel it in the fan base and the student body in the city, of Iowa City. You know, you feel the excitement.
The fishbowl. You know,
most people watch TV, and if you watch sports television, you know, you get a little bit of that hype on there every single time. And especially the guys who get individual recognition, you know, as, you know, award lists start to come out and as, you know, draft, mock drafts come out and things like that, and the individual players who are really stepping up and becoming superstars, I think for those guys especially, it's really difficult outside of the complex to kind of keep yourself grounded. But, you know, that's what great teams are able to do is week in and week out, they get the same consistent play out of their starters and their Stars never get too big, and I think that that's something that this team has a possibility to be.
Great answer. You know, a question that I had was about the kind of revenge factor, I guess. You know, as fans, we look at it. We look at the Minnesota game. We look at the Nebraska game. It's like, oh, Iowa got their ass kicked in that game, and so that's going to make a big motivating factor. Does that even play a role as a player?
I think a little bit it does. I remember certain games certainly thinking, you know, taking the revenge factor into it. It was always a very personal thing. As a team, I think you get so many guys from so many different places. You know, I think maybe the seniors kind of have, you know, the same mentality. The juniors might have the same mentality. The younger guys, not so much. But, yeah, it's there's a little bit that plays into that with, you know, when we got beat by Northwestern, that 2009 Orange Bowl year, I know that the next year, for me personally, that was a very big point of emphasis, was beating Northwestern. After losing to Iowa State my freshman year, you know, every other year it was a motivating factor. You know, I'm not going to lose to these guys again. And so from that perspective, from a personal perspective, I think you kind of build those vendettas, you know, teams that you like and respect, teams that you don't like, things like that. But as a team, as a whole, I think it's, you know, it's a combination of the coaching staff, the young guys who maybe aren't as into the rivalries, and that core leadership group being able to ground everybody and make sure that everyone is focused. And you play with emotion. You don't let those emotions play with you. I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I'm thinking of that Northwestern game. You know, anytime you get to see, you know, Pat Fitzgerald have one of those sad press conferences, that is a good good day for me. I don't usually get off on the Schadenfreude by going to other teams' bulletin boards or message boards or websites, but I do watch Pat Fitzgerald's web shows after. It's the only one. I don't know why. And someday he's going to be gone.
Because he's your evil doppelganger. No, that's why Jim actually kind of looks. Jim's like the skinny Pat Fitzgerald, Julian. He really is. It's uncanny.
It's like if Pat Fitzgerald ate me, which he could do probably. He's like 300 pounds now. That guy's like huge now. But, so I had a question, you know, and I didn't think about it before until you brought it up. I thought it was a great point is, you know, the comparison between Ricky Stanzi and CJ Beathard. I mean, it's so easy to spot the similarities from a couple of guys, and I don't know what they say. They say somebody's a gamer, or they say he's got the it factor or whatever, but, you know, I was thinking a little bit the other day, and I think I posted this on Twitter that I think CJ has a chance, just as a junior now, but he has a chance to be Iowa's first quarterback that sees a lot of time in the NFL. I mean, you've been around NFL quarterbacks and worked with them. What do you think from what you've seen so far?
I think it's absolutely possible. You know, the most important thing in the NFL are, of course, you have to be able to complete your passes. And, you know, part of that's your wide receiver and part of that's your ball placement. I think CJ has a great ball placement. The other part of it is really, you know, what do you do when the shit hits the fan, when things break down? Because a lot of the NFL, I think a lot of college quarterbacks who are pretty good in college get used to sitting behind that brick wall of an offensive line, you know, game in and game out and picking defenses apart. And in the NFL, the windows are a lot smaller, and a lot of the times you have to hit those windows while you're running from your life because there's so many freak athletes on the defensive line, and the blitz schemes are so much more complex, and coverages are disguised so much more efficiently. So I think that being able to keep composure when the shit hits the fan and being able to make plays out of nothing or to improvise on a play, you know, when you see an opening, when something breaks down, when you're able to adjust personally and make something happen, you know, that's a skill that can take you a long ways in the NFL. And you kind of, you know, you saw that last game, even banged up, you know, CJ is able to dive into the end zone for that touchdown. You know, the last thing of the game, he boots out when he's not supposed to because he saw that, you know, that was something that he could do. So it's those little things that, you know, in a big situation in a game, you know, instead of taking a loss, instead of taking a sack, you know, you get 3-4 yards, you put your body on the line. Guys see that and guys respect that, and it really builds confidence in a quarterback and can really make you a leader.
Yeah, and so that was the next thing I was going to ask is, what does that do for an offensive lineman or really just any other lineman when you see a quarterback that you know he's hurting and he goes and does something like that? I mean, that's got to be a huge lift for the team, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's huge. Part of you is, you know, screaming, stop it, you idiot. We need you for the rest of
the ride. That's what was going on at our house.
Yeah, if it doesn't work, then of course, you know, any time something like that doesn't work, then everyone's, you know, booing and throwing bottles and, you know, and why did you do that? You're such an idiot. But when something like that works, you're a genius. And sometimes it's luck, sometimes it's skill. You know, it's an intangible thing where the guys who are able to make that work consistently, time and again, you know, they're the ones that, that wind up being the geniuses in the end who lead their teams, you know, to great heights. And so far, CJ's been able to do that.
So how's your year going, Julian? I know it's been a little up and down, you know, with the NFL dream. Kind of give our listeners an update on life in Julian's world right now.
Well, it's Davenport, Iowa, at its finest. You know, I'm enjoying everything that the city has to offer. able to make a few trips up to Iowa City, which is always nice. Right now, you know, it's a waiting game for me. The free agent lifestyle, being always mentally and physically ready to fly out to, you know, pretty much anywhere in the country and, you know, work out for another NFL team or have to be ready at the drop of a hat to go back to Philadelphia and pick up right where I left off. But I'll tell you what, I'm actually really enjoying the time. I don't usually get to spend this much time with my two-year-old son. You know, I haven't the last 2 years, so I'm taking every second of it that I can and just making the most of it and really enjoying it and having a good time out here. I've always kind of felt like there's a million ways to make money, which you can't get time back. And, you know, these young years with my son and my wife is pregnant now with our second child. You know, this is time that I'm never going to be able to get back. So I'm actually really enjoying it, spending it with them instead of halfway across the country.
Well, that is awesome to hear. And that's definitely what it's all about. So that's great. So I have to ask you, as a official Davenport ambassador, I don't know if you know this, but I work for the city as well. But have you checked out the new Analog Arcade Bar that our good friend Kyle Carter in the downtown
hey,
got going?
I was there Saturday.
I have not personally checked it out. I'm very interested, but every time I have a friend who goes down there, all they say about it is that it's packed with hipsters. And don't get me wrong. I have lots of friends who are hipsters. It's not that I don't like hipsters or anything like that. It's the idea that it's packed. If I'm going to go somewhere and enjoy, you know, something, especially if I'm going to enjoy something new like that, I want to be able to walk in and kind of have, you know, to experience everything. And I feel like right now with the very limited free time that I have, again, you know, two-year-old son and pregnant wife, you know, to take those few hours that I might have in the week and go to Analog and, you know, stand in a crowd of people with skinny jeans and, you know, beards with short hair for a long time. I don't know that it's worth it for me at this point. So I'm going to wait until it calms down a little bit. I'm going to give it another week or two, and then I'll go check it out. But I am very excited to check it out because it sounds right up my alley.
Well, I tell you what, as payment for being on the always world-famous 12 Saturdays podcast, I could get you a behind-the-scenes tour with one of the bar owners that I know. So just hit me up on that, and we'll make it happen.
That would be spectacular. I would love that.
See, and I was there Saturday, took my wife. We went there kind of early, and it was fairly empty. It filled up by the time, you know, we had a couple of beers. But I can tell you that, well, I don't know, Tori, I wouldn't qualify as a hipster. I'm too old to be a hipster, right?
Oh, you're too dorky. No,
I'm too sure. I'm too nerdy to be a hipster, probably.
And kind of hairless, too.
Kind of also kind of clean-shaven. But yeah. I can tell you what it reminded me of, and this is, Julian, we're going to date ourselves here a little bit, so this might go past you, this reference, but it reminds me of back when Joe's Place used to be kind of scurvy. And it was full of pool tables and pinball machines.
Definitely.
Exactly what it reminded me of. And it was a great time. I don't know that my wife probably would give it quite those same reviews, but I felt like it was, you know, just kind of stepping back about 15 years. It was really great.
But hey, at least Davenport is hip enough as a city to have hipsters now. I mean, as much as you don't necessarily like hipsters, at least they're like a sign of health for your metro area, yeah. Right? I mean,
it's like that.
You know, your city's growing if it's got a large hipster population, because they only flock to areas that are in like development with new stuff that other people haven't figured out is cool yet.
It's right. Like, it's like it's like Soto Sopa, right? Yeah. On South Park.
we're rocking the Rust Belt chic. That's what I've read. So we'll do that.
What I really liked about it, though, and even more than the video games and the pinball, and there's some good beers there too, Tori. But what I really liked about it was that it's built in an old bank, and they have the old vaults and the old vault mm-hmm. doors and everything. And it was just, that was really cool how they had kept some of the old bank feel to it. So you had like the bar was kind of like where the tellers would have been. And it was a pretty cool place. We should be getting paid for them, by the way. We just spent like 10 minutes talking about Analog. So
yeah, it seems like some sort of, I mean, it's free advertising for them. We might want to stop before they would give them any more.
If we had any business sense at all, I mean, between this and between, you know, pickle companies and between, you know, the various things, we would be getting paid all, you know, we would be rolling in that podcast money, Julian.
Did you, you know, what Jim was referencing is my victory pickle. Before the Wisconsin game, I ate a pickle right before halftime, and they came back and won, so I've eaten one before halftime at every game, and, you know, I'm not going to stop now. So, did you have any player superstitions?
Oh man, not really superstitions. No, as a fan, I have way more superstitions. I have to be wearing, an Iowa shirt. I've got tons. I've got so much Iowa stuff, so it's not difficult finding one of those. If my wife dresses our son, she dressed him for the Indiana game the morning of that game. She dressed him in a red shirt and jeans. And I told her we're going to have to take that shirt off then, because we're playing in the end today. So nobody in my house can wear the opposing team's color. That's kind of my rule. Just little things like that. But it's not really, I don't have, I have to eat this sandwich on this day, or I have to, take my trash out, this way, or something like that. And as I grow older, I may develop such rituals. But right now, whatever is happening with that team seems to be working, and I wake up in the morning and I think about starting a ritual, and I just say, their success is not predicated on me, it's predicated on the work that they've put in, so I'm just going to relax and let them do their thing and sit here and quietly have my heart attack in my Hawkeye sweater and do it by myself.
This team is not as, do you know how many years you and your teammates took off Gemini's life?
Come on, man.
You can't even complain.
Yeah, and I will tell you.
I'm not so sure about that. That Wisconsin game was stressful as a mofo. And this last one, at one point when Indiana was roll, I thought we were going to roll them we almost picked off two passes and we scored the first two touchdowns and all this stuff. And I thought that we were about to roll them. And when they came back, they took the lead at one point, and I just about lost my mind.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing, and I'm sure you experienced that, but it's amazing how Maryland played hard for four quarters. Indiana played hard for four quarters. You got a big target now.
It's a big target, but that's the nice thing about Iowa football is, especially having played it, if there's absolutely one thing above all else that I know, it is that this team will play for four quarters and overtime if necessary. There is zero question about conditioning, about endurance, physically, mentally. There's no wear down in this team. So if it comes down to it, anybody who plays well for three quarters, good for you. But that fourth quarter belongs to the Hawkeyes.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that.
Yeah, and Julian, I think that you are still a player and you still remember your playing days, so you haven't bought into the superstitions yet. But man, give it about 10 years. I mean, I was mocking the victory pickles back in Wisconsin, there I was at halftime slamming pickles.
I think you got to do what you got to do.
I think it's because you don't have any control or influence because you're a spectator. You feel like you have to do something. So, But no, I think that's great. And and just going back to something you said earlier, I mean, you know, you said something about spending time with your 2-year-old son and your pregnant wife. And just as a guy who travels around the world for other reasons, not as noble as football, I will tell you that you are absolutely correct. Those you don't get those times back or those, you know. And I'm really encouraged to hear you say that. And boy, I wish I could go back and take another swing at some of those years too. So,
well, that's kind of a downer, man.
Well, no, that's very dark.
It wasn't. I was meant to be.
Okay, what brand of pickle is that specific brand?
Oh, it's got to be Nathan's, and it's got to be a half dill.
No,
Nathan's half dill.
No,
yes.
I'm eating the Vlasic. I'm eating the Vlasic spicy chipotle pickles.
No. So, and finally, I know we don't want to take up too much of your time, Julian, but I got to ask you this. As somebody, and I remember after the Wisconsin loss, we were kind of talking about, you know, oh, Kirk Ferentz's seat being, is it warm and all of this? And, you know, and I know you kind of doubled down on, you know, what a great leader he is. But how good does it make you feel to see what's happening this year for him?
It's tremendous. Just, you know, it's one of those things where, in a world where it seems like a-holes and douchebags constantly get the upper hand, and you got, you know, Donald Trump leading Republican polls, and that guy who bought the whatever was the cancer medicine or the AIDS medicine or whatever, and hiked up the price to like $1 million a pill. You know, you get all these dicks just, you know, basically, you know, who are rich and running things. And then you get a guy like Kirk who is a genuine, you know, one of the best people, period, that I've ever had the pleasure to work with. Or meet or just know or get acquainted with, just, you know, honest, solid, hardworking, does things the right way, makes not just good football players, but good men. The players who come through there, you know, it's a brotherhood in there. And with the exception of a few guys who really, you know, tried and worked their butts off, believe me, to not buy into the system. It's, you know, everybody else, you're talking about good, solid, you know, contributors to society coming out of that program. And to see that turn into success on the field and praise and accolades and everything and all the, you know, just all that success, he's earned every bit of that, and he deserves every bit of that. And it just makes me feel good that he gets, you know, that he gets credit for that.
Well said.
Yeah. And I completely agree with you. And especially given that there's so many vacancies right now, I guess the other feel good story, but it's kind of sad, is the Jerry Kill story. But otherwise you see a lot of folks getting kicked to the curb here in the middle of the year that really deserve it. I mean, do you see that report about coming out of Illinois?
Oh, that was ugly, wasn't it?
Oh, I mean, I always knew it was Illinois, so it was going to be bad, but, but I had no idea.
Oh, yuck. Nah, good stuff.
All right, well, Julian, you know how this works. Now we got to put you on the spot here a little bit, sir, and
let's have some fun
and get you to make a call with the Minnesota game. So it's going to be prime time. There's a pig on the line. New uniforms.
And I am so hyped for these uniforms. By the way, let me just say that I never in all my life thought that. First of all, I never thought that I'd see Kirk Ferentz run a fake punt. And no, I definitely never thought that I'd see new uniforms. I thought it was a hoax at the beginning of the year when they said I was going to have blackout uniforms. I'm like, it's Nike pulling my leg. There's no way I've got beautiful green earth. And the fact that this is happening makes me so happy. You have no idea.
Yeah.
Well, Kirk sarcastically
said it was the most exciting day of his life with his usual deadpan humor. Yeah. So I love that.
Well, I thought the best line was when he said, and who knows, if they look good enough, maybe we'll wear them the next Saturday, too. And I'm like, oh, that's how you get new uniforms, buddy.
Please do.
But,
well, so what do we see with the pig? I presume you've held it in the air.
I've held it in the air. It's a really nice, like, it's heavy. You know, you feel the weight, you feel not just the weight of the trophy, but the weight of the significance of this series, I think, when you hold that trophy. It's nice.
And and this is going back, like you said, going back almost, 80 years now. So there's a lot of just history built into this. And it goes back, this pig is so old, it goes back to when Minnesota was consistently good. at football. So yeah. But, you know, it is something. So the trophy games have that meaning for players. I mean, I know as fans we like to hype it up as well, but it's not just something that you guys feel like you're, you know, playing lip service to. It's actually something that motivates the players as well.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to need your prediction now.
Okay, Julie. I'm going to say trophy game in Kinnick, under the lights, fans blacked out, murdered out uniforms, number five in the country, Minnesota coming into our house. I'm gonna hope that a big win means that the Hawkeyes get to keep the new uniforms, and I'm going 45-10. I'm saying the Hawks blow them out.
Ooh. Ooh, man, that's a massive turnaround from what we saw last year. But I sure love to hear that. I from your lips to their, you know.
Pig's ears.
Ability.
Who's your standout player?
I think Desmond King comes out, has a fantastic game, continues to lead the nation in interceptions, breaks the Iowa record. I'm pegging him at 2 picks for the game.
Nice.
Oh, love it.
Are awesome. You going to be able to make it up there for either the wrestling or the football?
I don't know if I'm going to have tickets for the game, but I'm going to try and make it up at least for the tailgate. But the wrestling, I'm not equally excited for. I'm more excited for the football game. But the grappling on the gridiron or whatever they're calling it, wrestling outside. Very excited. If my wife will agree to watch my son, I'm coming for both.
Awesome. Well, hey, let's make sure you hit up our tailgate spot, and we'll get you a beer.
That sounds great.
Absolutely. Open invite. We really appreciate you coming on the podcast, and you're definitely a crowd favorite. My last question, of course, would be Star Wars movie, you know, is it going to live up to the hype, or is it going to tank? What do you think?
As much as I fear what J.J. Abrams typically does to things that I love, he is not Michael Bay. And so I will give him a shred of faith. One of my friends says is the one thing that you can be sure of is that, you know, death taxes and Disney does not make bad movies. So yeah. if anybody can do this, it's Disney. And I'm going to say J.J. Abrams finally finds the fit that I think, he's been longing for and really impresses everybody. And this movie is going to absolutely live up to the hype.
It can't be worse than those last three.
Well, yeah, the bar is set pretty low.
it's literally impossible that it'd be worse than the last three. It's also impossible because of the classic factor that it can be better than the original trilogy. But that's just from a nostalgic perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's very possible that this new trilogy will wind up being my favorite trilogy. If for nothing else than that our technology is so much better and the special effects and the fight scenes are going to be way better than they used to be.
That'll be cool. Awesome. And don't forget to hit me up on that analog thing. We'll get you hooked up, man.
Sounds good.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks. Bye. You know why I like having Julian as a guest? I mean, obviously our whole audience loves Julian, but I like it because in addition to being kind of a Davenport native like me, he's a football nerd.
Yeah.
And that's just an interesting combination to me.
I work with one too. I think that's a trait among offensive linemen, because Daryl's kind of that way too, now that you mention it. You know, he's really into the superhero things and his drones.
It's a high, you know, it's a thinking man's position, right?
It is,
to play on
absolutely.
The offensive line. I mean, you have to know every play, so but loved his prediction loved his prediction for the Star Wars movie. Loved his prediction for Minnesota even better. But let's take a step back and let's talk a little bit about our relevance, which we started off saying ironically, I think.
Yeah, this week in relevance, we were going to talk about the teams that actually mattered in college football. And hey, hello, Iowa.
Guess what? We're relevant.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, let's revisit last week's picks. I think that we both went, let me see here, we both went 4-2. Is that right?
Respectable.
Or,
I am
or 5-2
really...
because we both picked Iowa, obviously. But
but
you picked Northwestern. I thought Penn State was going to roll up Northwestern, and I was wrong on that one. And then you had Purdue.
Yeah, I don't know what deluded mindset I had that made me think Purdue could actually play good football 2 weeks in a row. That was obviously a big mistake, and I feel shame.
But what a bounce back for the Illini as well. I mean, you know, coming off losing their coach and now their AD and just rolling up Purdue. And obviously,
weird team. Aren't they a weird team?
They're just hot and cold, which, let me see here. So the next week, they'll be hot. And then by the time they come to Kinnick, they will be ice cold. So that's fine by me. If they're going every other week.
When are they coming to Kinnick?
2 weeks.
Oh, Purdue. I was talking about Illinois being a weird team. Purdue's not weird. Purdue just sucks. Well, Illinois is weird.
Well, Purdue was hot against Nebraska. They tanked against Illinois.
That whole year, though.
Well, it's true. And then, of course, we both whiffed on the Michigan State Nebraska team. You know, I had no problems at all with that.
You know, I want to protest. I want an asterisk on that one because that dude was out of bounds. That shouldn't have counted.
No, I had no problems with the call.
Of course you didn't.
No, okay.
So now if any defender ever touches you and you're near the sideline, just run as far out of bounds as you want and then run back in to catch the ball. That's
crap. So let's flip this around. So if you're running a route and the defender, all he has to do is crowd you on the line and you basically have to create offensive pass interference or push off to get so that you don't get pushed out of bounds. I mean, it's
a
judgment
call.
Yes,
because that's haven't you ever heard of the coach to use the sideline as a defender?
Yeah.
That's what he was doing.
Well, I think they made the right call by not overturning it on replay because the rules said that essentially if there was any contact at all, and those guys were checking each other the whole way down the line, so maybe it wasn't the right...
I want my asterisk. I'm saying that I went 5-1.
No, and I will tell you that that play and that call and that game possibly put Iowa into the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, as our worst case scenario, right?
Right. Exactly. It means win out and lose the Big Ten championship and you're in Pasadena and that's your consolation prize. I'll take it in a heartbeat.
For sure.
So, all right. So that was our picks from last week. So not too bad. I think mostly the best part was just watching what the Big Ten West did to the Big Ten East.
Maybe Ohio State is ducking us, right? I mean, they ducked us in 2002, somehow managed to win a national championship, but they're ducking us again.
Yeah. Those guys, they just keep escaping us when we're good. So looking ahead to this week, trying to see what the marquee matchup is here. We've got Ohio State at Illinois. Let's just start their lightning round.
Okay.
This week in relevance, we got Ohio State at Illinois. Illinois, you know, seems to have gotten their shit together this week, but no, not against JT Barrett.
Is JT Barrett going to play?
Yeah.
Is he? Wow. Well, I hope he learned his lesson, that young man. Ohio State rolls.
Yeah, same here. I think I'll take Buckeyes on that one. Maryland is visiting Michigan State, and I think Sparty and D'Antonio get healthy here against Maryland. Although Maryland is a little bit more of a tougher out than Michigan State is used to, but I think they've learned their lesson the hard way last week. So I'm going to pick Sparty in that one.
Yeah, I fear the Turtle Cloacas are going to feel the wrath of Sparty after that controversial loss last week. I would not want to be in a Terrapin shoe. Do Terrapins wear shoes?
I wouldn't
want to
be
do.
In their shells.
I wouldn't want to be in a Terrapin shell this week. Unless I could slap Gergen.
That's well, you can do that this week anyway, right? For no,
oh,
you don't
that
need
is
a
true.
Reason.
I get to slap him in person, even better.
I'm gonna slap him, and I don't even have a reason. I'm gonna slap him for making me edit the podcast last week.
Yeah,
for all the F bombs he dropped.
We were a day late in posting it because of him.
So Purdue has taken their big drum up to Northwestern, and I'm not feeling
nerds
it for
against
Purdue.
Turds. That's what I call that game.
So I think Northwestern continues to make our resume look good and punches Purdue right in the Boilermaker drum.
Yeah, you know, there's no other thing that could probably get me to cheer for Fitzgerald and the Mildcats, but if they make us look good, then keep on winning, you purple pussies.
Hey, here's a good one. Michigan versus Indiana. I'm going to go crazy on this one, Tori. I'm going to pick Indiana to upset Michigan. You gotta pick an upset once in a while.
You know, and they're gonna get one, right?
They're gonna get one.
They went toe to toe with Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa, and acquitted themselves well and couldn't win. But I still think Michigan has this weird chance to get into the Big Ten championship game. Stranger things have happened. And how awesome would it be to see Ruddock versus CJ in that game? I'm going with Michigan.
That would be an amazing storyline. I don't think we get it. I think the Hoosiers ruin that dream. Because I think they figured out now that if they can get Jordan Howard established running, that people are going to at least loosen up a little bit on those defenses, and then Sudfeld can have a field day.
Well, that's a good watch, though.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye. It's actually probably the closest thing to a toss-up that we've got on this slate, because the next one is Nebraska versus Rutgers. Two teams, you know, struggling to find something to salvage from this season, but I think Nebraska got it last week.
Yeah, I think they did too, and, you know, there's talk now that 5-7 can be a bowl game, which is odd. So Nebraska could still be fighting for bowl eligibility as well. So yeah, they'll probably win that one fairly easily, I think. Did you see the thread on the Nebraska board this week asking about being ranked if they get to 6-6?
I did see that, and it was oh so delicious. But I'm actually going to say Nebraska on this one as well. But I think they're going to struggle a little bit for the first half against Rutgers, because two reasons. Rutgers plays a little up-tempo, number one. And number two, just that's a long trip. I mean, that is
a long trip. The longest in the Big Ten, right?
Right. Furthest west team from the Big Ten to the furthest east. I just feel like that's a long haul to play an in-conference or a crossover game. So,
well, Iowa looked like crap in Maryland last year, so yeah. I can see that.
But I still think that's, you know, they win because Rutgers. So,
right.
All right. So then that brings us to the prime time, the marquee matchup.
Dun, 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 dun.
Under the lights with the pig on the line, Minnesota, Iowa. What do you got? Score? Who's your pick to click?
You know, the intangibles are really just lining up all Iowa in this one. It's impossible to pick against them. As we've been saying since the beginning, until they lose, they ain't losing. And
that's
they ain't
what
losing
you've
this
been
one.
Saying.
No, we, the collective we, all of Hawkeye fandom is getting on the bandwagon, Jim. You just are going to have to accept it. I'm sorry. I'm optimistic. I'm not quite as optimistic as our guest. I like Iowa just kind of chugging along, scoring in the 30s. So I think I'm going to go Iowa 30 on the nose, and they'll probably miss an extra point. That'll be how they get to 30. And I will say the Gophers only manage 2 touchdowns and they lose 30-14. You know, I think my pick to click is going to be Vandenberg, the receiver. He's just a first down machine.
I love it, you know. And who would have thought that Hillier would have had such a great game last? But he was critical.
It was great to see. You know, making physical plays and getting first downs. Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah, it was great. So I also see everything just kind of lining up for us. And I'll tell you this. You know, we like to have fun with the podcast. We like to joke around, and certainly when the team is not doing well, we have this is more of a comedy or a tragedy. But we're going to be in some very rare air this time next week, I'm predicting, because no Iowa team has gone 10-0.
That's amazing to think, isn't it?
It's so amazing. It's not even, it's almost like at a certain point, I feel like somebody's going to wake me up and turn off the PlayStation.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel real. That's why, like, the Michigan thing actually feels like it can happen to me, because it feels like we're on a story that we're part of an inexplicable story that can only have one ending. I don't know.
It feels like, you know, my kids like to watch those YouTubes of other people playing video games, right? And it feels like we're sitting in God's basement having a beer, watching him play Iowa on PlayStation.
Oh, I would hope we'd have a few more 50-point wins if that were the case.
That's true. Well, we don't know who he's rooting for. He's just playing Iowa. So I'm going to go. I'm actually going to predict a little bit bigger of a win here, for a couple reasons. Because I think that the players, the coaches, not only do, you know, I mean, Julian was talking a little bit about the, not the revenge, that's not the right word, but just maybe, you know, atoning or setting the record straight when you feel like you didn't, you know, you didn't do your best last time out. And certainly they did not feel like they did their best against Minnesota last time out. So I feel like we're going to be in the neighborhood of 40 points, closer to 40 points. I'm going to go 37. And I think that the defense rises to the occasion and keeps Minnesota to 17 points. So I'm going to say 37-17. My pick to click, my standout player is, I'm going to go with LeSean Daniels.
I can see that.
He didn't have the flashy long run that, that Wadley had, who maybe not be a little banged up, but he had that, just that same thing. He just kind of embodies this team. He grinded it out. At the end of the day, he had two touchdowns. Wadley had one. Certainly Wadley's was more prettier of a touchdown, but you know, Daniels doubled him up. So I'm going to go with that. I do think that Dez King gets his eighth pick, and from now on we're going to have to call it Kinnick King Stadium.
Isn't it actually going to be his ninth? I think he is sitting on eight.
I thought he was... Oh, maybe he is sitting on eight. But what we can call it is, we could call it the Desmond King Field at Kinnick Stadium. You know how they name the field?
Yeah,
the
there you go.
Different things. So, or we'll say Kinnick Stadium brought to you by Desmond King.
The Desmond King end zone, and it's all blacked out because no one ever gets in there.
And then I predict that you and I have a number of alcoholic refreshments after the game to celebrate being 10-0, because honestly, this is we're on the precipice of a, we just kind of crossed over from, you know, I think that Wisconsin, we crossed over from this could be a good year to this could be a special year,
a fun turnaround season.
Yeah, and then I think the Indiana game, we crossed over to you're going to want to remember where you were. Now you're going to want to remember who you were with for some of these moments going forward.
You know, it's funny, Jim, that you brought that up, because when I was driving home this afternoon, I was thinking about how special the season felt. I'm like, what? At what moment did it start to feel special for me? And I was lucky enough to be at the Northwestern game. And when everything looked like it was going to shit, you know, the quarterback is hurt. And then, you know, Kanzeri goes out. It's obviously a devastating injury. And then Iowa comes out and just railroads them in the second half. And it was a beautiful day and everything, too. I don't know. And it was with good friends. And that's kind of when it hit me, like, this is going to be a special season for Iowa. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, and we were teasing Julian a little bit about how many heart attacks they gave us in 2009. And we really haven't had that yet.
No, the Wisconsin game's really the closest, you know, having to come that up one, with that huge fumble at the goal line.
Illinois fumble in the fourth quarter and the onside kick. And that's really about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, I wouldn't say relaxing because there were nervous moments, but, you know, and the thing is that as the season has gone on, Iowa has overcome even the minor amounts of adversity they've had with such ease, I guess. Well, maybe not me. Ease isn't the right word, but they've been able to overcome every stumbling roadblock put in front of them. And at some point you just have faith in them.
Yep. And, and let's, you know, at some point you just kind of say, well, you know, next man in, and completely, have faith that they will figure out a way, whether it's, you know, turning to the running game or turning to the passing game or CJ's heroics or the defense is going to shut something down or something. It's just, we're finding multiple ways to come through and really kind of keep these games out of reach. And saying all of that, because we have to say, you know, like you alluded to earlier, we're still taking everybody's best shot. Everybody knows that knocking off Iowa at this point can salvage a season, can build for next year and could possibly save a coach's job or maybe get an interim taken away from their title.
Correct.
Today. So, but as fans, we have the luxury. We can splash around in the magical waters a little bit longer.
Well, you know, and to kind of reiterate on what Julian had alluded to as well, is that I think Iowa is the kind of team that does better when they are getting another team's best shot. You know, the things that seem to trip up Iowa sometimes in the past, especially against maybe lesser rated teams, was just kind of seeming like they were kind of sleepwalking or, you know, just not there 100%. Not because of lack of effort, but just because of, I don't know, lack of focus maybe. I don't know what, but there's no lack of focus now. I mean, everything is nope. Under the bright, shiny spotlight.
Yeah, exactly. And they seem to, and they actually seem to kind of relish that.
Yes, they
that
do.
Focus. And that's just amazing. And it's amazing to be a part of it. And let's hope it continues 1 week at a time. And
I'm so excited. It's Tuesday and I don't even know how I'm going to get through the rest of this week. I really don't.
I'm getting no work done this week as our
many I am.
People.
I'm trying. I'm working hard, but man, I just want it to be over.
I'm actually having like a minor outpatient surgery thing on Thursday. And I'm just like, you know, this week is just a write-off, you know, between that and getting ready for football. So, well, every week, you know, that we ascend to new heights. So with that, we'll just have to sign off, I guess, in the usual way and say, on Iowa.
Go Hawks!
Now, that's what a pickle should sound like. Vlasic, that's the tastiest crunch I've ever heard.